Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Welcoming back to the show, Gary McNamara. And Gary is, I always want to say he's a frequent guest. He is. He's a friend of the show, and I love that I have him on, you know, as often as I get to have him on. Gary McNamara, welcome back. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me once again.
Yeah, I'm glad to have you here. So for people who don't know, Gary has many hats, I feel like, in the news world, at least, because he is currently the Chief and Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs at Sacred Heart University. But he was also the former Chief of Police at Fairfield's Police Department. And so and he's on a bunch of committees. So a lot of news outlets will go to Gary for his expertise on things. And today we're actually going to focus on a time where Gary was the Chief of Police in Fairfield, because it sounds like, Gary, you were one of the people who helped craft this SHAPE program. Now, I was talking last week, for anyone who missed the show on Friday, you could catch it on my podcast, WICC600.com. But I was talking about this SHAPE program, or I was introduced to it, because I wanted to know where the DARE program went. I know it dissolved years ago. I know there were financial reasons for it, and it was kind of narrow, the amount of reach it covered and things like that. But I was not aware that some districts adopted their own form of kind of a DARE program, and talking about things like drugs and alcohol and things like that. So, Gary, first of all, for people who don't know, what is the SHAPE program?
So just to back up just a little bit, you know, as chief, I certainly had people that were really driving and working on it. So like Captain Ed Wyatt, who's now a captain now, but at the time was really heavily involved in our school unit. So they really developed it. It was just at the chief level to say, how can we do things more efficiently? So it basically takes some of the models of DARE, the safety, the health, and, you know, positive kind of awareness and drug education, but allows it to be distributed into more grades. DARE was very heavily into the fifth grade, and we kind of looked at that and said, there are a couple of reasons, but one of them was, you know, why just fifth grade? Because the hours that the DARE program, it's a national program, and you have to follow the guidelines. So you're putting a lot of emphasis and investment in the fifth grade level. What about sixth grade? So they graduate the program, pomp and circumstance, they graduate, certificates, and then nothing happens. So we kind of looked at ways in which we can spread it into the other grades.
Okay, so help me to understand this. So with Fairfield's model, from your understanding, does the SHAPE program then continue on in middle school?
It does. It goes into the sixth grade. So, you know, with the hours used to be, you know, it was 10 one-hour classes in the fifth grade. Now we were able to spread it out now so that you would have five 1-hour classes in the fifth grade and the sixth grade. Combine that with the fact that, you know, the officer-friendly program, we did away with that years and years ago, and then combined it with the fact that we're trying to invest in school safety and get officers in the schools. How do we take the DARE officers that were in the schools and now spread them out so that we can allocate the resources the best that we can? You know, it's all those circumstances together, spreading it out, getting the awareness. But, you know, you think about it, Melissa, and you know, if you were in the DARE program, after fifth grade, the graduations, the photographs, and then in sixth grade, it's like, oh, we hope you learned your lesson, because in sixth grade, we're not going to touch you at all and have any conversations about it.
Right. Yeah. No, I do remember it. I felt it was very fifth grade. It was very heavy. But the only thing I heard in that, Gary, that is a little concerning is cutting it down to 5 1-hour classes. Do you find that, you know, it would be like, does that work? Having just 5 1-hour classes for fifth grade and then 5 1-hour classes for sixth grade? Or like, how expensive is it to do the SHAPE program? Because, like, to me, it would be nice to do the 10 1-hour classes for fifth and for sixth grade. But maybe I'm asking too much.
Well, no. And again, I wouldn't be able to dive deep into it now.
Sure.
So, you know, but I know that it's very well received. And, you know, let's not talk about the hours. Let's talk about the quality and the personalization of it. You know, the DARE program is a national program that officers are trained in DARE. So everything they do is structured around DARE. You can only graduate if you go through the DARE program. Our officers who are in the schools already know the schools, know the teachers, and begin to shape the program, basically tailor the program for Fairfield needs, for our school district's needs. So 10 hours of national training as opposed to 5 1-hour classes of really diving deep into what's going on in the town of Fairfield, I think is more important. And again, it's not you're cutting the program, you're just spreading it out. But so the hours, it might be a little bit different, but I think the quality of the program is better and very well received. You'll still see on Facebook and postings on various social media accounts of graduations of the SHAPE program.
Okay, Gary, I'll take that. Gary McNamara is here. He's the former chief of police in Fairfield, currently works on the public safety command staff at Sacred Heart University. And we're talking about the SHAPE program, something that Gary was involved with when it came to fruition here in Fairfield. When did that start, Gary? Do you remember?
You know, I want to say 2014, we kind of transitioned. It was certainly after Sandy Hook where we were looking at our presence in the schools, but probably right around 2014, we transitioned away from it. And there were other reasons as well. You know, the DARE program, there was a debate about whether the DARE program was effective or not.
Mm.
And I know that if you go and look at it now, the DARE program kind of remodeled itself based upon some of those concerns.
Interesting.
And then the other thing was there was a budget issue. So that if we wanted to buy graduation certificates or we wanted to use local opinions or local resources to develop graduation, we couldn't do that. All the things had to be heavy DARE. You had to have the DARE emblem. You had to, you know, really a national program. And so it was marketed for that. So you couldn't just kind of, hey, we can get something cheaper here or maybe do something different here. We really just had to follow that program. The SHAPE program allowed us to personalize it and break away from that model.
That's interesting. No, and that's a really great point and something that people probably don't think about. And you're able to use also like local resources, which is kind of nice too, you know, support local.
That's right. That's right. And teacher involvement, kids involvement, you know, it just adds a little personal touch to it, which at the end of the day, you take the national issues, but ultimately at the end of the day, you want to personalize it for our youth. I mean, you know, the kids in the school, you want to really have that personal touch to it.
Okay. Gary McNamara is here, the Chief Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs. He's also the former chief in Fairfield. And Gary and I were talking about the SHAPE program that has been, it's like 8 years probably that it's been with Fairfield Schools. And it's essentially a better version of DARE, and it's more localized, and it's been really crafted into what works for the teachers, administrators, the schools in Fairfield. I'm curious, Gary, I know you heard the conversation I was having on Friday talking about rainbow fentanyl. I am deeply concerned about it. I have known about fentanyl for a very long time. I think it's only getting worse and worse. And now the latest type of fentanyl is clearly targeting young people. It's coming from the Mexican cartel. And it's already been detected in 18 states. If it hasn't been detected here yet, it's because they don't know about it or they haven't gotten a report of an overdose yet. But it's either here or it's coming. I think you and I both know that. So my question to you is, do you think the SHAPE program is enough? Do you think that we should be doing more in schools? Because I know the argument, and I say this all the time on my show, do I think the border's a mess? Yup. I think anyone who's right-minded knows that there's a problem at the border, no matter where you are politically. But it's here. So we could argue about it politically as much as we want. I don't mean you and me, but I mean the world can argue about it. But it's here already. So what can we proactively do now to stop our kids from trying it? And that's, I'd love to get your perspective on it.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, I've always said we've got to identify problems and solve problems.
Mm-hmm.
So we never do that. I mean, so we can talk about the border, but if it's coming in through the border, how do we solve that? Take away the politics of it. How do we solve it? What do we do to solve it? Except the fact that if you have to take a stronger stance at the border, you have to take a stronger stance. I mean, it's coming here, and we really have to start paying attention to it. We can't talk around it, Melissa, because it is here, and it's a huge problem. There are seizures going on in the state of Connecticut. They might not be publicized much, but there are seizures going on where kilos and pounds, whatever the quantity, is being seized in the state of Connecticut. So it is here. You know, is there enough in the schools to talk? I mean, are we talking enough about it in the schools? So it's always been a balancing of resources, and that's the key. So the SHAPE program provides information at the school level, at the fifth and sixth grade level, and in some regards, the officers there can touch on some of the younger grades. You know, there's other resources in the community. The school also has to teach our children. And I'm recalling as during the break, I'm remembering the fact that the fifth grade is a really teachers had always thought that the fifth grade was instructionally and curriculum heavy, and they needed to get a lot of their own curriculum in that time frame. And the DARE program took away from it because it was just heavy into fifth grade. So that's one of the other reasons why we spread it out. But yeah, it's a balancing of resources. The SHAPE program provides some of that information. Fairfield Cares, an organizational group in Fairfield, talks about it and discusses it, tries to engage the community in a lot of different ways. But we have to stop talking around the fentanyl issue and say it's a problem, and say, okay, well, what are the solutions, and develop that five or six solutions that we're going to take to kind of get a handle on it and try to address it, because it is a problem.
Yeah, it absolutely is. I mean, not that I'm expecting you, Gary, to fix it in one phone call with me, but do you have any solutions
off
the top
Melissa,
of your head?
I could fix it.
I mean, I know you could, Gary. Listen, you're like one of my heroes. I consider you a hero, my friend. I'm just saying. Listen, I mean, it's a very loaded question to say, like, what are some of those solutions? Like, so, for example, you know, like the SHAPE program, this is the first time I'm hearing about it. I don't know how many school districts have created their own kind of a SHAPE program. So, like, is that something that should be a call to the governor's office? Like, hey, we should be requiring something like this in more municipalities, or I don't know. What is one of those solutions? You don't have to give me all of them, but like, what in your mind would be a solution?
I think supply is a big issue. I think we need to kind of get a handle on supply and stop supply. However, we can do that. You know, you can't do that just in the state, just everywhere. You got to stop supply. And then you got to make sure you're doing a good effort at prevention and awareness. So, yeah, I mean, should school districts always focus on awareness and instructional aspects of drug prevention? Sure, they absolutely should. Some communities are probably still using DARE. And I'm sure there's a variety of different districts that are using some sort of program to do that. I don't think there's any that are neglecting the issue, but I think it's only one component. But I think that if you are in a community and you have school-age kids, you should be finding out what your district does and supporting those efforts, and supporting them not only in the school but outside the school. Because we got to, as soon as we can, the earlier we get those prevention methods to our kids, the better off I think we're going to be. You know, just say no to drugs is a slogan. You know, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Deep dive into it and make sure that program and that awareness and those prevention activities are occurring.
Mm-hmm. Well, Gary, I appreciate you even having the conversation, always having these kinds of conversations on the show. I think they're so important, and I always appreciate that I get to have them with someone I'm comfortable talking to, Gary McNamara. So thank you so much.
You got it, Melissa. Be well.
All right, you too. Gary McNamara, the Chief Executive Director of Public Safety and Government Affairs, also the former Chief of Police in Fairfield, right here on WICC. We want to welcome back to the show this morning Dr. Andre Newfield. Now, Dr. Newfield has been on many times before. He's with Hartford HealthCare's St. Vincent's Medical Center. He is a chair of psychiatry, and we are talking this morning about September as Suicide Awareness Month. Good morning to you, Dr. Newfield. Welcome back.
Hi, Melissa. Do you hear me okay?
I do. I can hear you. Thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks
having
me.
Yeah. You know, Dr. Newfield, the timing is pretty perfect, not just because it's September. I hate to even use the word perfect, but we've had two very recent deaths that were very sudden, very tragic. A higher up at Bed Bath & Beyond, the CFO, died by suicide. Also, country star Luke Bell struggled with mental illness and took his life. So we've seen this on the national level, and we've even seen it in the last 2 years, a major uptick in suicide rates among children, especially mental health. What can you tell us this morning?
Yeah, unfortunately, we've been seeing the trends actually over the last 10 years or so going on the upswing. And, you know, how the pandemic's going to factor into this, I think, will remain to be seen fully over the next few years. But so far, you know, having a Suicide Awareness Month and having people like you getting the word out is really, really important, because the more with mental health issues that we bury our heads in the sand, you know, it's pervasive and it's there under the surface. And we really have to talk about it and start considering, you know, who are the people in our lives who need more help so that we're not ending up, you know, with regrets in the end afterwards, and we've done all we can.
So what are some things that people should know? I know in the last just few months, they created the 988 national hotline. We talk about that a lot on my show. But what are some other things people should know if they feel like they are struggling, maybe even mentally, emotionally, they're going through a rough patch, and you know, maybe they're not even thinking suicide is part of their journey. And you hope to God that's the case. But a lot of times people don't even recognize, Dr. Newfield, that they have a severe issue that could lead to that.
Well, one thing that's important to realize is that past behavior indicates future behavior. So if you're somebody with a history of mental illness, depression, bipolar, schizophrenia, and you've already had some thoughts of that, then unless you start doing things differently, you're likely to have those thoughts and potentially behaviors again. The good thing to know is that there is hope. Number one, those thoughts are usually fleeting. Even in the worst of them, when somebody has an episode and is thinking of suicide, you know, the likelihood is that in a few minutes, in a few hours, in a few days, the situation might be very, very different. And what a shame to act on something that's fleeting when, you know, presumably it's going to get better. And furthermore, with treatment, you know, that's the long-term route of you know, changing that behavior, of changing those long-term thoughts so that they don't return. Because oftentimes it is, we all have complications in life, but the decision or the thoughts of whether to end your life in that moment, you know, are usually fleeting and not necessarily a permanent state of being.
Dr. Andre Newfield's here, Chair of Psychiatry at Hartford Healthcare St. Vincent's Medical Center, and we're talking about September is Suicide Awareness Month. We know that the legislature passed something very recently, Dr. Newfield, and it's to address mental health a little bit better in Connecticut. We also know on a national scale, they passed that gun law that does put, you know, millions of dollars into mental health services. Do you feel like we almost acted too little too late? Do you feel like we could have done more to better have these conversations, especially with our young lives and especially during the pandemic while we watched what was unfolding? Or do you feel like, how could we have known? Like, could you give us kind of, from your professional standpoint, statistics or anything that could back up, hey, you know, we saw that this was an issue and it was a growing issue and we're acting now, which is good, but we sort of missed the boat a little bit.
Thanks so much. I think that's the crux of the issue. I think when it comes to children and mental health, we do see a significantly changing scope. Perhaps there's more recognition of mental illness, and that's why we're seeing significant upticks. You and I have previously discussed how social media might impact, and that's a new aspect of development, which remains to be seen in terms of how it fully bears itself out, but certainly has an impact. What I'd say, though, is that we have known for a very, very long time that mental illness is a significant issue. And over the last decades, going back 50 years, there's been something called the Bell Commission, which has worked on closing out the state institutions, the state beds, and deinstitutionalization, which I think on the whole is a really positive thing. We're trying to bring people out of being institutionalized and into the community, back where they belong. There was probably too much of a pendulum swing to over-institutionalization. However, with that switch, we were promised that we'd have, you know, that funding not just going away, but shifting to other resources in the community. And unfortunately, over the years, you know, when that funding has been reallocated and budgetary issues have come up, it hasn't gone towards those community needs. And that's why we're seeing a lot of our mentally ill ending up homeless, a lot of our mentally ill ending up in prisons. And it seems like a booming problem, and it seems like we're spending more and more, when in essence, there's been a bit of a bait and switch, and we've actually been spending less. And what we've gotten back is a pittance, which is why we need more, and we need to talk and think about it a lot more.
Right. And in essence, we didn't invest in it for way too long. So now we're trying to play catch up, and we still haven't really hit a sweet spot where we feel like, okay, we're addressing it as well as we could. That's what I'm hearing from you.
Yes, it's exactly true. And it's you know, seeming probably to, you know, most people that we keep spending more and more, and this is an exploding problem, but when's it going to end, or why do we keep spending more and more? It's actually somewhat of an illusion, and we've been spending less, and we do need to spend more because it hasn't been adequate, as we see with the numbers going up.
Yeah, exactly. Dr. Newfield, I always love having you on. Dr. Andre Newfield, Chair of Psychiatry at St. Vincent's Medical Center. If people want to learn more about behavioral health services at St. V's, you can go to stvincents.org. And I appreciate you coming on, Dr. Newfield. Thank you for your time.
Thanks as always, Melissa. Pleasure.
All right. We'll talk to Dr. Newfield again. Don't you worry. He comes on pretty often here on WICC. We know one of the bills that's being debated in Congress is something that the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare has been advocating for a very long time, several years at least, to provide over-the-counter hearing aids. It's something that we've talked about a little bit on this show. It's something very important to many of our listeners. And joining us this morning to dive into this a little deeper is Dan Adcock, who is the Director of Government Relations and Policy for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. Dan, welcome to the show. Thanks for being here.
Good morning, Melissa, and thanks for having me on.
Of course. So, Dan, paint the picture. I know even people always think it's just senior citizens who are going to benefit from this. But, I mean, talk to us a little bit about hearing aids, how expensive they are, because I know even for myself personally, my brother-in-law is very hard of hearing. He was born with the issue of just kind of a deterioration of whatever he's got going on. And he's only in his mid-20s, and he is very hard of hearing off one side of his head. And I have said to him, you got to get hearing aids. Like, you're going to need hearing aids by your 30s, maybe your 40s. And he's like, Melissa, I can tell you right now, I don't have the money for hearing aids. So until someone tells me it's a bigger problem than I'm just kind of deaf, essentially, I'm not paying for them. So could you talk a little bit about this? And it's a little more significant for senior citizens because it could be very detrimental just beyond, oh, I just can't hear you.
Right. Well, and I can understand, you know, they just, for so many people, that, you know, the cost of a prescription hearing aid, you know, that runs $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 is pretty prohibitive, especially if you're talking about somebody who's just living paycheck to paycheck. And of course, the other part of it is that most health insurance, and even pretty good employer sponsored health insurance, doesn't include coverage for hearing aids. So, you know, it's you know, regardless of your age, it's something that's an obstacle to getting it. So What's new and what's different now is that these over-the-counter hearing aids, which were made possible by legislation to regulate them and set standards for them, enacted back in 2017, and by the way, was a bipartisan accomplishment between Senator Elizabeth Warren from Massachusetts and Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa, is now coming to fruition, where next month we're finally going to have these devices that are great for people with mild to moderate hearing loss that are going to be in the range of about $200 to $300.
You know what's amazing about this, Dan, is the thing that the National Committee has been fighting is the fact that Medicare doesn't cover this at all, right? Like, it's not seen as something that they would cover in the past, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. That's right.
So
yeah.
The thing that I think could be a misconception for people is, you know, like when you go to a grocery store, for example, you want to get, you know, an over-the-counter medication. A lot of people will go for the brand name. But if they want to save money, they'll go with the one that local store came out with. And sometimes when you try those medications, they're just not of the same quality. Like, you could just tell. I'm not going to name drop. But for example, if I go to a grocery store and I get the grocery store brand of like a Benadryl or something, it's just not the same. Doesn't work on me. I have to get Benadryl. So with hearing aids, with this deal, will they get good quality hearing aids, or are they just going to get something until they can afford the better hearing aids on the shelves?
No, they're actually going to get good quality hearing aids. And again, it's thanks to this legislation that Senator Warren and Senator Grassley were able to get passed and enacted back in 2017, that there are standards for these hearing aids. You know, obviously, and again, you know, I want to emphasize that for your listeners that this is a great option for people who don't have the money and also have mild to moderate hearing loss. If you have severe hearing loss, you probably should stick with a prescription. With going to an audiologist and getting a prescription hearing aid. But this is going to be a great option. And you know, part of the real reason why we'll continue to fight for having Medicare cover all, you know, even including prescription hearing aids, is that one of the problems with untreated hearing loss, which is significant, is, you know, because only about a fifth of people who need hearing aids are getting them because the cost is so prohibitive. One of the problems is, and this the National Institutes of Health identified, is there's a direct link between untreated hearing loss and dementia. And so anything that we can do to try to get hearing aids into the ears of people who need them is going to mean there's going to be fewer people who end up having dementia. And that's great from a quality of life perspective, obviously, because it would save, you would save family members going through the anguish of having seeing a loved one decline cognitively and eventually pass away. And also it has the extra benefit of for the society in terms of reducing costs for spending on people with dementia and Alzheimer's disease, because the number of those individuals is supposed to really ramp up and eat up a significant portion of the money we spend on healthcare. So it would be a win-win for everybody to get more of these hearing aids, even these lower cost ones that are still good, into the ears of people who really need them, so they can live a long and happy life and have their family be around for their family to enjoy. So that's why we're really excited about this development.
Dan Adcock is here, who's the Director of Government Relations and Policy for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. I'm curious, Dan, in your professional opinion, now that these $300 to $500 hearing aids are going to be over the counter, do you think it will lead to Medicare eventually covering hearing aids? Like, I would think this would make the market very competitive to the point that maybe at some point Medicare would cover it. What do you think?
Right. I think that's possible. I mean, hopefully what they'll do is they'll bring down the cost of prescription hearing aids, which, you know, the issue there is there's only five companies that kind of have cornered the market on the prescription ones, and there's a significant markup on them. Mm. And so if those companies are feeling the heat from the over-the-counter ones, in terms of competition, then we're hopeful that could lower the price of adding hearing coverage to the Medicare program, and that would make it easier for some lawmakers to decide they would want to go along with it. We're very excited that Congress, you know, just recently passed the Inflation Reduction Act, which finally allows Medicare to negotiate prescription drug prices. But the bill originally did include coverage for hearing aids, and unfortunately, through the negotiations, some senators thought this option was too costly, so weren't able to include that in the legislation. But you're right. I mean, I think what could happen now is that the price tag of offering it for the entire Medicare program could conceivably come down because of the introduction of these over-the-counter hearing aids, and so we're hopeful that that will happen.
And last question, Dan, do you know when these over-the-counter hearing aids will become available to the general public?
My understanding is it's October 17th is when they're going to become available.
Wow, it's really soon.
And, you know, it is. So people definitely should be looking for them. And they're, you know, they're going to be sold in pharmacies and like big box electronic stores. So people should definitely, you know, check it out, see if it works for them. And for a lot of people, it's going to be just what they needed. So we're really excited to see this move forward. And a lot of people finally get their hearing loss treated. And so it's a really positive development.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Dan Adcock, I really appreciate having you here, the Director of Government Relations and Policy for the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare. And thank you for taking the time to come on the show. Looking forward to chatting again in the future.
That'd be great. Thanks, Melissa.
All right. Thank you, Dan.
Let us welcome back Bob Donovan, who's our marriage consultant here on The Morning Show. Every summer, he takes a little time off to be with his family and to take a little break. I don't blame him, but I missed him. Bob, welcome. How are you?
I'm good. It's good to be back.
I mean, I can't blame you. I'd take a little break too. I totally get it. So I'm glad to have you here. And I love this story that sparked your idea of talking about marriage moments today, because it's a beautiful concept. And it's, I think if people are honest, they have these moments sometimes, but they don't always talk about them. What sparked your idea of talking about marriage moments and like what they are?
Yeah. And so it was, you know, like many topics, I don't think of these. They just come to me. And this came to me in a really, really unintended way at a Beach Boys concert this summer at Bridgeport, right? Beach Boys, we grew up with them, fun group. So we were at the concert. And again, this might sound really silly and superficial, but it wasn't. Like, so they're singing their songs, they're surfing songs and everything. And they sing this song called Be True to Your School. And it's a cool little fun song. And they're playing it, and I'm looking over, and Karen, my wife, is like just singing at the top of her lungs, you know, be true to your school, just like you were. And she's singing it. And that picture of me looking at her, like I didn't see a 69-year-old, 47-year marriage woman. I saw like a 14-year-old, free, fun, singing woman. I mean, it was just a picture I'll never forget. Like, it sounds silly, but it wasn't, right? So that triggered, like, that was a moment. That was a moment, like, I will really treasure and remember. So I got to thinking about, you know, again, 47 years. You know, what other moments have we had? And I bet you, if I talk to you about, you know, your marriage and Derek, like, you can easily come up with, you know, four or five of these things, right?
Oh, sure. Absolutely. Absolutely. Right. And I love this concept of like a memorable snapshot, because so often, Bob, and I, you know, I'm having this conversation recently with my two sisters, because they're, you know, either getting married or looking to get married in the next couple of years. And with both of them, you know, it's when you're younger, it's like those big moments, like your wedding or when I had my kid, that we think are going to be like the biggest standout moments. And yeah, those are moments from society's standpoint that are your standout. But in your marriage, though, there's a line, Bob, and of course I'm gonna botch it right now, and I know Derek's listening to the show and he's like, come on, Melissa, don't stumble, but I will. It's in Good Will Hunting, where Robin Williams is talking to Matt Damon about like the weird isms. I can't remember what he calls it, but he's like, it's those moments that I'll miss the most when his wife passes away. And it reminds me of what you're talking about. It's like these moments that are captured very quickly. And they're very spontaneous, and they're not planned, and they're very like unexpected, really. And you're like, whoa, I don't know. That's what this reminds me of when you talk about these moments.
It's exactly right. And obviously the big ones, you know, your birth of children and birthday and things, like, of course. But these things, they reflect your marriage, and they happen like, you know, unplanned, spontaneous, like the Beach Boys thing. Like, I never dreamed. Even that little image. Why did it hit me so deeply? Why? I don't know. It just did.
Right.
So I look back. They are spontaneous, unplanned. They reflect your marriage. They're this intimate connection of something, right? And I can look with many, but I'll just talk about a few we had. Like, I'll never forget. We had a really rocky first few years of marriage, really tough. And when we started putting it back together, we went to the Catholic Church at that time, and went to one of their, they call them marriage encounter weekends, and it really started us on the track back to restoration. And it also taught us how to communicate emotions and feelings. So it was really good. And at the end of that, they play this song by the Seekers, "I'll Never Find Another You." Again, another silly little song, Melissa. To this day, I hear that song, I have to like check myself, because it brings me back to that moment, right?
Yeah.
And, you know, even fun things, like we had something like years ago, like, you know, Karen's a really proper, you know, put together.
She's like Mary Poppins. For people who don't know
she
Karen,
really is.
She is Mary Poppins. She's practically perfect in every way. She really is. And she'll tell you she's not,
really,
but she is. She truly is. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. So we had this thing, like we had this big, you know, hot crumbly apple pie, and Karen put a big spoonful in her mouth, and she coughed right on my fork. Right on my, it was like a direct hit on my.
I love it.
And you know, again, moment, right? We laugh to this day, we laugh, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Here's the thing, though, Bob, is what I've learned from you and Karen, and we've applied to our own marriage as well, is that you're intentional. Like, you and Karen are intentional. You have to work at making an environment where you can not only have those moments, but recognize them. And so what does somebody have to do to create an environment where you can have those moments? You can create them, but you also are able to recognize them.
Yeah. Well, number one is you really need to be aware of these things, that they are going to happen. They do happen. You have to be aware and look for these things, okay? You also have to consider that these could be positive and healthy, or these could be negative and unhealthy. So the environment you create kind of leads you to having these healthy, happy, satisfying moments or opposite. So that's one thing. And then, again, I look back for us, and I look back on these moments we had, and a couple themes come together. Like, Karen, my wife and I are a team. Like, we are a rock solid, aligned, united team. And that's why these moments, if I talk about another one, like my oldest daughter's high school graduation, like it was difficult. Like, we had three of them, and she went through a really tough time. And this, again, at her high school graduation, when she got her diploma, we looked at each other and started to cry. Mm-hmm. Not a word was spoken, but we looked at each other in that moment of that accomplishment of parenting, that we knew how significant that was, right? So, yeah. You know, being a team, working together, are two things. There's more that certainly, you know, how you communicate. A lot of couples today communicate, I call it, at a factual level. Like, how's your day? What did you do? How did this go? Right? And we do that.
Very surface. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very surface. And again, you, of course you do that. I'm not saying you have these deep, intimate, emotional conversations all day long, because you'd be like fried by 10 o'clock in the morning.
It's a little
right?
too much. Yeah. It's too much. Yeah.
But there are times when you need to go deeper, when mm-hmm. you need to talk about your day. And, you know, just recently, I'm going through something with somebody I'm coaching, and it's just rough, like, because they're going through something rough, and it's really, I'm an empathetic guy, and it's really bothering me. So just being able to tell Karen I'm doing this, but man, this feels heavy, you know? So, you know, just sharing your emotions and your heart is another thing. If you do that consistently, then you are going to have these types of connections along the way.
Yeah, it's a great concept. And I know you and I talk a lot, like I said, about being intentional and creating an environment that you want your marriage to thrive. And I love that we get to have you come on and talk about that. And so we welcome you back, Bob Donovan. I'm very excited to get things rolling again for another year. If people want to contact you, though, before the next time you pop on, what's the best way that they can find you to ask you more questions?
Yeah. Sure, that'd be great. I do always enjoy getting emails from folks. So, that would be my email would be bdonovan, D-O-N-O-V-A-N, at blackrock.org.
All right. Bob, I'm so glad to have you back. I've missed your voice. Thank you so much. And we'll talk in a couple
okay.
weeks.
All right, Melissa. Take care.
Thank you. That's Bob Donovan here on WICC.